You may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Good morning, Justices. My name is Brad Eastland, attorney in Norfolk with Egley Folder Montag Moreland and Eastland, and I represent the appellant in this matter, John Thielen. John Thielen is a farmer, lives in rural Cedar County, Nebraska, and he owns a quarter of ground, and his quarter of ground borders a county road. And there was an electric fence that was placed in the ditch along this county road that borders his land, and he used that in order to trail cattle to get from his place up to another area of his land. And Cedar County decided that he could not put that electric fence in the ditch because they allege that there's a statute that prevents him from doing so. And so there was a criminal case involving that, which will be the next appeal after this one, or the next case heard after this one. But in this case, it has to do with an injunction then that Cedar County filed against Mr. Thielen, preventing him from placing this electric fence in the ditch. And so that injunction was entered, but it would be our position that the entry of that injunction was error. The main reason, well, there's two different reasons, but the first one I would address is that Cedar County has an adequate remedy available to it if they believe that this electric fence should not be there because it violates a statute. That statute is 39-301, which provides that if an electric or if a roadway is obstructed, it is a class 5 misdemeanor, which is a crime criminal case, maximum penalty being a $100 fine. And they have chosen that
route. Haven't they tried that route?
Yes.
At least one conviction?
That's
two or three more pending, you know, under the appeal. So haven't they tried that remedy? And has it proved successful?
Well, they have tried that remedy, and there have been 4 convictions for the same thing. And so that remedy has been tried, but that doesn't mean that it's not an adequate remedy.
Is a criminal remedy at law adequate if it's unable to prevent repeated violations or pose potential harm to public property or welfare?
Well, our position is that it would be adequate because the legislature has said if you can't do this.
And adequate to do what? You're contending it's adequate, but adequate in what sense?
It's adequate in that they can haul him into court and bring him in front of a judge and give him a fine of up to $100.
But would you concede that it's not been adequate to prevent him from continuing to do the action that the county contends is a violation of the statute?
Well, that has happened, but my argument is
I didn't really get an answer to my question there. Has it been adequate to prevent him from continuing to take the action that the county believes is a violation of the statute?
Well, one answer I would give you is yes, because it hasn't happened again, and I know that's not in the record, but there hasn't been any further actions or criminal cases involving it. But the real issue is that Cedar County has this remedy available to it, and so basically they're double dipping and say, well, we don't think it's enough, and so we also want to go ahead and file for an injunction against you.
Isn't the criminal remedy a response to a criminal action, but the injunctive remedy trying to prevent a potential harm in the future?
Yes, but filing a criminal case also is a way to prevent something from happening in the future. I mean, you can take this to completely, you know, extreme levels and say, well, this person, individual, shoplifts all the time, and we're tired of them doing it, and they're not just, our remedy is not enough. We now want an injunction against them to prevent them from shoplifting.
Well, you can ban and bar them from your retail establishment, can't you?
Yes, you could do that, and that's another remedy available.
Does it matter that this is a public entity seeking extraordinary relief?
I think it does, because it's the same public entity. Cedar County, through the state of Nebraska, can file a criminal case, and then Cedar County, over the exact same thing, is now going in and saying, well, we need to do an injunction on this as well. I mean, you could take it to a less extreme level and say, a municipality has said you can't park here. This guy continues to park here. We fine him every time, but we don't like that. We need something else, so we're going to do an injunction against him to prevent him from parking here.
They'll just tow it. Like with the diplomats.
Right.
But the parallel, though, is not exact in the sense that only the county attorney can bring the criminal case, but the county commissioners or supervisors could initiate the case for injunctive relief even if the county attorney refuses to act. Isn't that true?
That is true. But in order to issue the injunction, if they were to ask for one, they have to show that it's necessary. And our position is that it's not necessary because they already have the ability to file a criminal case against him. And basically what they're saying, in our view, is, well, this fine just isn't enough, and the legislature didn't give us enough power, so we want more power. And we
Is that what your client said? The fine just not enough? It's cheap pasture rent?
Well, we have some dispute with that, but I recognize that is in the record.
So even your client says the fine's not enough?
Well, and maybe it isn't, but still, the in order to get an injunction, it's an extraordinary remedy. This court has held an injunction is an extraordinary remedy. One of the cases I have cited in my brief is State versus Maltby, which has been around since 1922, if I remember correctly. And that's what this court held in that case. They said, well, there already is a remedy to, it was something having to do with getting a chiropractic license, and there already is a remedy, and you don't need an injunction to enforce your remedy that you already have. And that's really what's going on here. They're in our view, they're double dipping because they don't like the remedy that the legislature has given them. So then they go out and ask for injunction because it has more teeth to it. Because if he violates, you're now in district court. If he violates the district court injunction, he could be brought in on a contempt. If he's held in contempt, he could be placed in jail for violating the court's order. So now they feel like they have more teeth to this, and therefore they want more power. But they should not be allowed to have this extra power because it's an extraordinary remedy, as this court has held, and a remedy that is not necessary.
Didn't you tell us just a few moments ago that the injunction has effectively changed your client's behavior? That he hasn't violated the injunction?
He has not.
And you were using that fact to suggest that the injunction itself wasn't necessary, and it tripped me up a little bit.
Well, he's been abiding by the injunction because he doesn't agree that it should be in place, but he's been abiding by it because if he doesn't, then he gets in more trouble. But our argument is it shouldn't be there in the first place, and I reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Fitzgerald, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel, my name is Mark Fitzgerald. I'm representing Cedar County in this case. Mr. Thielen's argument, as counsel indicated, is twofold. The first contention is really the definition of cynicism, and that is that Mr. Thielen says the county has an adequate remedy at law. Their adequate remedy at law we're going to continue to violate because he says that the criminal consequences are cheap rent. The fine he has to pay for violating the statutes that he violated amounts to cheap rent, $25, and he does it again and again. His second argument that Mr. Easland didn't talk about is that he says his client didn't violate the two statutes that we allege that he violated in the complaint, section 39301 and 39310. But with regard to the first argument, Mr. Thielen ignores that the exception to the general rule that it is in fact true that while criminal prosecution is normally a complete remedy at law, where there is a continuous and flagrant course that violates the law, then it no longer is an adequate remedy at law. And the facts in this case are essentially uncontested.
So what is your source for what you have just told us?
My source for the exception? The Zimmerman case is the most recent time that the court has looked at this. That's a 2014 case where this court was looking at the conduct of a individual who fired a shot at the window at the an office window at ConAgra campus, and the court looked at justice records, or the district court in entering its injunction looked at justice records to indicate that this individual will not be, or will not likely be stopped by criminal prosecution, and entered the order enjoining him because there was the possibility or likelihood of repeated conduct in violation of the criminal.
And likely is the threshold.
Well, in that course, in that case. In this case, the dissent in the Zimmerman case, Justice Castle wrote a dissent in the Zimmerman case, and in that he said that he was concerned with the idea that there was no evidence of repeated violations. Rather, the court was concerned with the likelihood of repeated violations in the Zimmerman case. In this case, we have actual repeated violations, 2013, 2014, 2015, three times in 2016 before he finally says flagrantly, it's cheap rent.
But that's in this record, in this injunction record. Is that correct?
It is.
Okay, and so the argument was the cost of doing business isn't getting his attention.
Yes. That is in the record. That is in the affidavit. There's two affidavits from the county superintendent, the road superintendent, Carla Schmidt, and that's in both of her affidavits.
But setting aside the Zimmerman case, there was abundant case law about continuous or repeated violations that authorize injunctive relief. In fact, the most common ones would be the repeated trespass cases.
Yes.
And this is almost exactly a repeated trespass case, isn't it?
Yes. Your Honor, I was thinking about this in the context of if this was not a county right-of-way, but simply an individual with a right-of-way, this would be tantamount to the landowner continually obstructing the easement owner's right-of-way easement owner's opportunity or rights under the easement owner's easement.
Can I ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel? What distinctions may be relevant to a private citizen versus the county seeking the injunctive relief for these repeat? What tools do those different entities have?
Well, the county, as indicated in the questioning earlier of Mr. Easland, the county has the opportunity through its county commissioners to commence an action for an injunction to protect the public's right, the safety of the public. That is the concern of the statute in protecting the motorists or the users of the road's safety by not only citing the person with a criminal violation for criminal conduct, but to stop them completely with an injunction if there is a repeated and continuous violation of the right-of-way easement or of the statute itself.
How do you respond to your opponent's argument in brief that there really isn't an obstruction because you've got the traveled surface and he never puts the fence on the traveled surface?
Justice Castle, I focused on that in my brief. I looked at the statutes in the Article 3 of Chapter 39, and it is clear, if you read through those statutes, there's about 10 of them there, that when the statute uses roadway, the statute means the traveled portion of the road. That is the part of the road that a motorist would use. When the statute uses road, it uses road as being synonymous with highway, which is a defined term in the statutes. And so highway means the boundary between, in this case, the 66-foot boundary from the center of the road going on each side, that it would include the shoulders and the road ditch. That's highway. That's also road. Roadway is the traveled portion of the road. And so the statutes that we have cited in our complaint with regard to the injunction, 39301 and 39310, involve obstructions to a road, which we say includes and is clear from the statutes that surround 39301 and 39310, that road means all of it, the traveled portion of the road, the shoulders, and the road ditch.
So let me ask you this in a little bit different way. I hesitate to do this, but who owns the ditch?
Yeah. Chief Justice, this is a right-of-way, so the ditch, the landowner would own the ditch as far as its real estate or fee ownership. The county has a right-of-way to use that from the center of the road 66 feet out. So,
well, the landowner also owns, assuming the road is placed where it's supposed to be placed, would own underneath the center of the road too, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. But
this is, the counties don't take title to these tracks. They just use the rights of way that are so long established by statute that they've acquired almost a religious significance to the local population.
Yes, the county has a right-of-way, Chief Justice, that would run from the center of the road, 33 feet on either side. The landowner owns the land to the extent that it can be utilized subordinate to the county's right-of-way.
So the county has a superior use.
It does.
And the county has an obligation to keep the road obstructed and safe. And that includes the ditches, correct?
Just Fredenberg, exactly. The statutes, the 39301, 39310, and the group of the several statutes in there are really welfare of the users of the road, county citizens and other users of the road, yes.
And this series of statutes is why we don't have fences right along the highway up and down across the entire state.
That's right. I considered the fact that there's photographs in the record of this electric fence and usually a single strand wire. I consider the fact, well, that's really not an obstruction to a motorist, but it is an obstruction to somebody that's operating wider and wider farm machinery. It is an obstruction to the county folks that have to mow the roads. It is, because the record is that he puts this fence up between June and November, it is an obstruction to snow removal. And it does obstruct the ability of motorists to see when the grass grows around it. So it is.
Or if you're drunk and slip into the ditch.
It is. All of those things. Yes.
So, Council, what's the significance of subparagraph I in 39-17-02 sub 2, the one that reads that one of the county road purposes is the construction and maintenance of stock trails and cattle passes? What do we make of that?
You know, I'm not sure about that particular. That's in 39.
Hang on. 1702 sub 2.
Yeah.
Setting out the purposes of the county road.
Yeah. Justice, I think that the county has an obligation to maintain the county roads. I'm not sure of the significance of that. The collection of statutes that is included in the 300 article are a collection of kind of a hodgepodge of statutes that existed before there was major highway legislation, and then were all amended and polished a little bit, but they still have a lot of antiquated terms in them, and they really are a hodgepodge of statutes. But I did not believe that I looked at 39301 or 39310, that either one of them was ambiguous with regard to road meaning and including shoulders and ditches. I see my time has expired.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 13 seconds.
1 minute and 13 seconds, Mr. Easland.
Thank you. Well, as far as the issue of the definitions goes, I didn't get time for that, but it will come up in my next one that's right after that, so I think I'll just address it then. But one thing I want to note about the Zimmerman case is my opinion is that case is easily distinguishable from the situation here, because that case involved ConAgra asking for an injunction saying, you know, we don't want this guy on our property, which is a completely different situation than a governmental entity saying, we also have the power to prosecute you, but we also want additional power to place an injunction on you. And so
Justice Castle brought up the fact that there are county attorneys and county boards, they actually have different powers. Does the county board have the right to prosecute?
Not themselves, but they could certainly tell the county attorney, hey, you know, we think this is happening, we want you to file criminal charges.
What if the county attorney says no?
Well, then it shouldn't happen, because the county attorney is the one that is the one that decides whether or not charges are going to get filed, regardless of whether or not the county board thinks he should or should not file charges.
So is prosecution a viable alternative to the injunction at all? Is that an adequate remedy at law for the county board?
Yes, I would argue that it is, because the legislature has deemed it to be a crime, and therefore, if it's a crime, then they should prosecute it as a crime.
Your strongest argument that it is that, in fact, it was prosecuted in this instance.
Correct. They have chosen their remedy, and they just wanted more, in our view. And so, thank you for your time. That's all I have.
Thank you very much.
Please.